Yeah, and you'd think after the huge success of Iron Man 3, you would probably get some, you know, really juicy projects to do after that. Mm. But 3 years, and I mean, Nice Guys is fun, but it's not like, you know, this big marquee project that, you know, everybody's aching to see or anything like that.
That's true. I do hope it sort of, I guess, the, you know, reception it deserves, though, because so many people, like, they won't see something unless it's adapted or it's a sequel or it's, yeah, what's it called? Spec scripts are very difficult to convince people to go unless it's got, I mean, it's got Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe in it, I guess, which should hopefully sell it.
Are they big name draws, either of them? Do people run out to watch a Russell Crowe movie still?
Not really.
No, huh?
Are we recording this?
Oh, we're already recording. We're already recording.
Oh, excellent. Oh, okay, cool.
I just didn't do the intro. Maybe I should do that now, yeah? So
just gonna fade it in.
Yeah, exactly. So guys, we already started. You're listening to You Podcast. I'm Asim Verney and I'm joined by Shai Hussain. Hi Shai, how's it going?
It's going great.
So we're already like fully into dissecting Shane Black's career and wondering why he's not bigger than he is, because this week we're reviewing The Nice Guys, starring Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe. So I'm probably going to leave that first part in and just like, yeah, people can figure it out. I'm going to put a title on the post anyway. Like we were saying, I think it's an odd one, because they've released it right the same weekend as X-Men, right?
Mm. Yeah, which I also watched.
on the same day.
Yeah, so back to back. I sort of like, what's we went to watch the Nice Guys, what's it, preview, and then had that lovely Egyptian food, and then I ran back and sort of checked a few emails, and then it was the midnight screening of X-Men straight after that, so yeah, that was fun.
How was X-Men, just shortly, without spoiling anything, because I'm going this weekend, so I just want to...
I don't think it's as bad as everybody, you know, all the critics are making out of it. It's entertaining. There are some sequences in it that are just brilliant. But it doesn't really, it sort of like suffers from the same thing X-Men 3 did, which was that, you know, they introduce all these new characters, but don't really give them time to, you know, just have any depth at all. It's just like, oh, that's the bad character. Oh, that's, you know, and then there's no reason why they are following this apocalypse guy and stuff. So it's annoying, because the first two were really good. I especially enjoyed Days of Future Past. I thought that was great. But
yeah, me too. Yeah. I love that one. Yeah. And how much Olivia Munn is there? Because that's like the most important reason why I'm going to watch that movie.
You mean how much of Olivia Munn's clothing is there, I'm thinking.
Fully clothed, I'll take Olivia Munn however she is. I think she's awesome, whatever she does. Like, kung fu fighting in a full ninja suit, I'll go watch it.
Yep. Olivia Munn is no nun. She's very much at show. There's not, again, I mean, she's one of the ones who, you know, suffers from very little character development. But she does kick ass very, very well.
That's cool. I'm in. You sold me.
It's worth a go. But The Nice Guys is definitely the better film. If you're going to choose between one film or the other, I would definitely recommend The Nice Guys over X-Men.
Yeah. I think after we saw the movie, we were kind of dissecting... I mean, I think we can kind of say that we both really like the movie, right? Like, from the start. But the funny part is, are we conditioned to like this movie? Just because we've been raised on these 80 buddy cop kind of movies. You know, it's like a movie that's made for us in a way. But I wonder if this is, you know, the kind of movie that would translate to today's audiences, which is really interested in those franchises and superheroes. And none of that is in this movie, right? It feels very small. It feels very contained. Even the action and the comedy it feels very lived in. It feels very real. And
yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes it just feels, is that enough for people, you know?
I don't know. I mean, you know, we were just talking before about, like, you know, I mean, personally, I'm not sure whether I would have gone to see this at the cinema unless I'd, you know, like, before the preview screening, because Shane Black, yes, he sold it to me from his name. Ryan Gosling, I'm a huge fan of. But generally, you know, it's sort of like, it didn't scream out like, this needs to be watched at the cinema. Yeah, we're being conditioned.
Like, having seen it, I'd maybe even rather watch it at home and watch it multiple times. Like, this is definitely a movie you will be revisiting if you like it, right? It's really one of those Jackie Brown kind of movies that you can watch every time and time again, and kind of the dialogue is so fast, there's so much banter between these two stars, you'll probably miss a few jokes, and when you revisit it, you might, you know, hear something that you'd missed out on the first time. And the thing is, it's not a necessarily a cinematic movie. It's not one of those big screen events like when you and me last saw Jungle Book. That is something you absolutely need to see in the cinema. X-Men, I would say, I have not seen the movie, but it's a spectacle. You want to watch it on the biggest screen possible. I don't know if necessarily Nice Guy is a cinematic experience, right? And neither were those older movies that we loved. Lethal Weapon, if you look at it now, is it a movie that you would necessarily want to see in the cinema? I don't know.
No, Beverly Hills Cop as well. Yeah, I don't know whether any of those are, you know, like Bad Boys, yes, because it's got like explosions and it's got like big cars and action.
Michael Bay. You know, Michael Bay is like the most big screen cinema guy there ever is, you know, so that kind of adds to that factor. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's maybe just. Maybe just that genre is not suited for today's audiences and the big screen anymore. I don't know. I hope the movie does well, though.
Yeah. I mean, if we lived in a world of like video on demand where everything comes out at the cinema at the same time it comes out on video, I think it would fail. The only way that it'll probably succeed in the cinema is by having that you can only watch this by paying, you know, cinema prices to go and watch it. So it is a pity. I mean, you know, there are so many great films that we're probably missing out on these days because they're just not spectacle. There's nothing lost in watching them on TV than watching them in the cinema. So, yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, we're spoiled for choice. And I think also the problem is, you know, you have one, like if you're not going to the cinema during the week, and you're going on the weekend, you have the choice of one movie, right? You're not gonna, I don't know, like the days where I used to watch three or four movies in theater, those are long gone for me, at least, you know, in my age group. So if you're going to watch one movie, you probably want to watch the spectacle.
Even with the prices of cinema tickets these days as well, you know, you can probably only afford to watch one film a week and everything.
Yeah. It's a weird one, I think. But anyway, beside that, beside how well the movie will do or the release or how it looks like on the screen, what were your general thoughts about The Nice Guys?
Generally, I thought it was hilarious. There were loads of laugh out loud moments. The performances were brilliant. Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe were both fantastic as these you know, guys trying to be hard men, but really quite ridiculous at what they did. And you're rooting for them and you want to spend time with them and you want to, you know, see them solve this case and everything. But, you know, is it at the same time, it's a very believable buddy-buddiness that sort of like organically grows between them. It's not just, you know, they're just, it's not predictable. It's not, you know, Lethal Weapon of just like, oh, that's the mad guy and that's the straight up guy and everything. They're both pretty nuts. and then they just you know, carry it off really well. So
I think because Shane Black is so well versed in this genre of buddy cop two guys and that kind of dynamic, he also knew when he should be playing and kind of playing against our expectations with it. And I think with Nice Guys he really did a good job with it. I had no clue that Ryan Gosling could be funny. I'll be honest with you. It wasn't something that I was expecting. I didn't think it would he would be able to pull it off. And honestly, I've never even seen him be funny. Because you were mentioning that movie with Steve Carell. I don't remember the title of it.
Anyway. Crazy Stupid Love. But he was the straight guy in that.
He was the straight guy again in that one. So he, like, him being a funny man just didn't. And the thing is, the way he's being a funny man here, it's not even a smarmy, ironic, cool guy. I mean, he has those elements, but he's doing slapstick, he's doing physical comedy, things that I would never ever think, you know, Ryan Gosling would be able to do, but he really pulls it off. He is one of those Disney kids, right? He's one of those Justin Timberlake, Britney Spears kind of people that are able to do everything. So he probably can sing and dance too, but we just haven't seen it yet. But he really pulls it off, and he for me, he was the big surprise. Like, going in, I like Russell Crowe a lot, a lot of his movies, and I love Shane Black, and those were kind of the main reasons I was going into, and seeing the trailer, which we had posted. I got somebody sent us the trailer quite early, and we posted it on the Facebook page of You Podcast, which people should like if they haven't had the chance. I can always see the tracks and the likes, you know, and people weren't really reacting to it that much. And I was like, wow, this is awesome. There's just nothing about this, it seems, that connects with people. It's a shame. It's a shame.
I think, what you were saying before about it, like, you know, it's targeting the people who grew up on those 80s films. And, yeah, there is so much 80s about it. The soundtrack for it is very, very 80s. And the, you know, the whole neon lights and... yeah, it just really, I don't know, I mean, I didn't realize it when we went to see it and stuff, that, oh, this is so 80s, but just looking back at it now, that, if it was released in the 80s, it wouldn't have been out of place at all, so, and,
I think it's in the 70s, to be honest, isn't it?
Oh, it is, it's in the 70s, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, Shane Black introduced, like, action in the 80s, so I got that vibe. But, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it was a script that he wrote before Lethal Weapon that he just kept in a back pocket and then just thought, well, I've got all this money after Iron Man 3. Let's go make this passion project, which nobody would...
that nobody is going to go watch.
Yeah.
So, Russell Crowe is kind of like, he's playing the straight man more, right? In this one, and he kind of has that Danny Glover role, if you could call it that, but he's much more physical. I mean, he's beating up people left and right, and he does have still his funny moments. I like Russell Crowe. I don't know if, and he came down to the screening too.
That was a great surprise.
He's such a funny guy, like, even in real life, and you've seen him so become part of the character and the movie for so long, you almost forget that he's Australian and he has this really outrageous accent, right?
It's true. I mean, you know, when he walked in, I was very, very close to just sort of like standing up and saying, "To infinity and beyond." But then I realized that's completely the wrong quote.
Nobody would have been like, "Who is this guy talking about?"
Exactly. Sparta!
Just yell out random wrong quotes at him.
Eternity! Echoes! Life! I don't know. Yeah, good thing that kept that undercover. But no, I mean, he was really, really funny. And, you know, I think it's been a long while since I've liked him in a film. I mean, you know, like, I went to watch Les Miserables, and just, his singing in that was just awful. And
it was miserable. Everybody was miserable.
It made me miserable. But I'm not sure when the last time I really liked him in a film was. You know, there's Gladiator. Obviously, he's amazing in that. The Insider, he did a great job in. And then what else was there? He did quite a few Ridley Scott films, but there wasn't anything that I just sort of like, you know, that reached that level of Gladiator.
Seen Noah?
No, I've not seen Noah yet. Is it worth it?
The thing is with me, you know, I don't like always classifying movies as good or bad. This one is interesting.
So, great, great.
So I wouldn't. Oh, he was in Man of Steel, a small role, and he was also in The Man with the Iron Fist. If, I don't know if you've seen that one.
I heard that's by the rapper, isn't it?
Yeah, the RZA.
The RZA. Yeah, I heard good things about it. It's supposed to be entertaining, but.
I also liked the next 3 days. It's kind of a low-key thriller that he was in. I really liked that one, too. Yeah, so clearly I've seen way too many Russell Crowe movies compared to other
movies.
I like the guy. That's what I'm saying. I even saw Cinderella Man. I like Master and Commander. So clearly I am on the Russell Crowe boat, for sure.
Yeah, I watched Master and Commander and Cinderella Man. I had big hopes for Cinderella Man, but it didn't really do it hugely for me. I thought it was okay, but
the thing is, with a boxing movie, you can never beat Rocky anyway, right? So it's hard.
Again, you're gonna kill me for this, but I find Rocky so overrated. It's like, get off my show, get off my
We can have a whole Rocky discussion and I can like scream at you for 30 minutes like why this Rocky is amazing. I think the problem with Rocky is that the whole franchise got muddled. Like, people, when they complain about Rocky, they don't know what Rocky they're complaining against. Is it 4? Is it 3? Is it 2? Is it 1? Because they're vastly different. And Creed was amazing. I don't know if you've seen Creed.
I thought it was good. I just didn't think, you know, it just felt really predictable. And I don't know. I like to be surprised. I'm just always seems to sort of like hark back and homage the original Rocky over and over again, like Rocky 6 and Creed, and it's just like, okay, we get it, you know.
But that's what that was your problem with Star Wars, wasn't it? It's exactly the same thing. They're it's not the same thing. It's they're referencing the movie that came out 30 years ago. So I think that's if that didn't work for Star Wars, it's not gonna work for Creed. But I was crying. I was like, Creed. It really pushed me. That one.
I'm lucky. I know Star Wars. I loved it in the bits where it was just bringing something fresh to the formula. I love the whole sort of like. You know, the way that the Kylo Ren character, you know, like, even though he's very, very emo and stuff, but the whole development of, you know, him and being Han's and Leia's son. These spoilers for anybody. Everybody's seen Star Wars.
Everybody's seen like a gajillion dollars, and I think it's okay. You can spoil Star Wars.
Yeah, but generally, yeah, the things that it bought where it wasn't just like, oh, let's do it this way, the same way that it was in New Hope, or let's do it that way, the same way that it was, you know, in Return of the Jedi, and just followed its own instincts and followed its own. Yeah, just having more faith in yourself rather than trying to copy what came before. I think that's what I like most films for.
But plus, you're the diversity guy, man. You should be like shouting Creed off the top of the mountains, like how awesome it is. You know,
Ryan Coogler. I am completely fully on for diversity, but it needs to be about quality as well. I mean, it's the same as Sadiq Khan being made mayor and stuff. Yes, righteous. It's great that he's been made mayor, and the new mayor of Manchester is gay, which is brilliant. You know, diversity rocks, but they'd better do the job right. So it's the same with films as well. You know, yes, diverse, but make sure you're making good films. Show that, you know, those chances are worth it.
I think we should just give them, we should cut them as much slack as we give other people slack. We shouldn't you know, it shouldn't, because Creed got that chant, it shouldn't be like the best movie ever made either, you know? It's really good, you know what I mean? So, anyway, we're completely off track. We're back to Nice Guys, that's why the people tuned in, I guess. We were talking a bit about the performances of Russell Crowe, and the other two, I think, were Anguri Rice. That was the little girl.
She was very good.
She was really, really good. And how awesome of a name is Anguri Rice? It's like rice with grapes in it? Like, what?
There is!
I think that's an awesome dish, probably.
Where's that from? Is that an English name, or?
Australian. She's Australian, apparently. Yeah, so probably her and Russell Crowe really hit it off, probably, I imagine.
Yeah, I can imagine.
She was also there at the screening. I didn't even recognize her. I had no clue she was in there.
She seemed a lot taller.
Like, yeah, probably because the movie was shot like probably a year or two ago, and at that age you just grow. But yeah, she was really, really good, and she was playing Ryan Gosling's daughter, And she was playing that kind of precocious teen role that, you know, is made famous by the Abigail Breslins and the Chloe Grace Moretzes of the world. But I think just the writing of Shane Black and then her performance was, it was really, really believable, because it could get annoying and grating quite easily, especially a few scenes where she's confronting Russell Crowe and forcing him to make the right choice sometimes.
Yeah.
Those could have been really cloying and annoying, but I think her performance really sells it, to me at least.
Yeah, me too. I mean, you know, I could not sort of like, I think when she first came on, I was just like, oh, please don't be the annoying one. And then thankfully she wasn't. So it's just like, I mean, you know, it's the same kind of fear that we had in Iron Man 3 when there was that little kid who was helping Robert Downey Jr. And it was just like, you're going to be really annoying, aren't you? I'm going to want to punch your face soon. But no, he was fine in that as well. I don't punch children.
I don't. I really don't.
apart from the once, but that was a mistake. That was just a reflex action because he was trying to wake me up from my sleep. That was just a reflex. It's just a... sorry, the arts.
So the other performance was Kim Basinger. Is it Basinger? It's Basinger, right?
That's there is. Say Basinger followed by Schwing.
Unfortunately, there were no references to LA Confidential, which is like one of my all-time favorite movies of them. Yeah,
completely missed that. Yes, that's another amazing Russell Crowe performance. He was very good in that.
Yeah, and Kevin Spacey, man. And the whole movie is awesome. We should record this and then go watch LA Confidential. I think everybody should do that. That's an awesome, awesome movie.
I used to feel sorry for Kevin Spacey back in the day because, you know, after that and... it was Minority Report. It was Colin Farrell and everything. Yeah, but it was always like... No spoilers. gotta stop assuming everybody's seen everything. But it's just like... But that was a good time. There was loads of these like dark thriller mystery films out around 99 2000, so hopefully you see that again.
They try to make another one, Black Dahlia or something, but it was really not that good. I remember it was also based on an Elmore Leonard novel, and maybe even the follow-up or something like that, I don't know. But yeah, it was not that good. I mean, I think LA Confidential, it was just the script, the timing, the cast that they put together, it was so good. But I mean, they don't have any of that. Kim Basinger's role is quite small, it's short, it's and she doesn't really have that much to do, but I was just happy to see her back on screen. I think
she still looks amazing.
She's aged so much better than Russell Crowe. She looks so much better than Russell Crowe.
It'd be interesting seeing him back, you know, before and after pictures. But it's true.
Yeah.
Just weird, because...
I think Russell Crowe put on a lot of weight for this role, right? Because, he didn't look like that at all when we saw him in person.
Yeah.
He has, a proper beer gut, but I think it's... it suits the role. It suits the kind of person he's playing in it, huh?
Definitely. I mean, that's the thing. You know, that role could have easily gone to Ryan Gosling, but he would have played it more as sort of like the, you know, six-pack sort of like, I'm smart, I know it all, and I can beat up people really, really easily with just like one punch and everything. But yeah, it could have been a very different film and a bit more... Yeah, I think that they both did really well in this.
But Ryan Gosling beating up people wouldn't be believable at all. It's kind of like when we watch South Indian actors beat up 30 people, as like, or Shahid Kapoor beat up 50 people. It's like, what? Seriously, I'm not buying it. It's not gonna happen.
He played a hitman in Drive. He beat up people for a living.
I
wasn't a huge fan of Drive.
Yeah, the more I kind of look back on it, it's kind of like lowering less and more and more in my esteem. Although, funnily, Only God, what's it called? Only God.
Only God Forgives.
Yeah, Only God Forgives. That's kind of rising more in my esteem. So it's really weird. Yeah, and then there's Matt Bomer, who was also at the screening, and I think we were at least third. three fourths of the movie, and I'd completely forgotten he was in there. I was like, wait, why was that guy in that? Why was he there with the mic? And I was like, ah, then he suddenly shows up. So he comes in quite late in the movie. I don't know. I don't know Matt Bomer as an actor. I haven't seen much of his work.
What else has he been in? I've heard his name popped around a lot, but I've not actually seen him in anything yet.
His IMDb page says he was in... I mean, he was in Chuck. I know he's in White Collar. I don't know if that show is still on or not. It's not anymore, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, he's been in American Horror Story. So he has been quite... Magic Mike he's been in. So maybe that's why he's that popular. I've not seen much of his work in any case.
I keep seeing his name popping around everywhere, but I'm not actually... seen any of his stuff, but he was all right. He didn't, stand out that much and everything. But Ryan Gosling has definitely, reached that sort of my top five like guys who I love who may turn me like sexually really? And everything. Wow. Yeah. So yeah, there's sort of like Brad Pitt, Johnny Depp, and now Ryan Gosling are in there. Who sort of like they all share a very similar quality in that they can be very, very. Like sexy, but then at the same time be hilarious as well. You know, they sort of just can do ridiculous. And I think now that Ryan Gosling's proven that he can do ridiculous as well, yep, deservedly up there. Top three.
Yeah, you definitely have a type, man. You like skinny white dudes.
That is quite bad.
Hey, it's good to know, man. I mean, you never know how life turns and what it's good that you've drilled down what profile you're aiming for. You know?
And I'm bringing Amir Khan into there as well. If we're widening it out to the horizon.
Now you're bringing in Amir Khan because I pointed it out.
It's just that anyhow, let's get back to the. I need more time to prepare.
prepare the list of guys that would turn me.
Yes, there we go. My next BuzzFeed article.
You won't believe what happens next. You were talking a bit about the setting of the movie, right? Being in the kind of the 70s, and I had a really it's a setting we've seen before, and filmmakers like to revisit that setting. I think it also helps them in terms of storytelling because you had no digital media, you had no cell phones, so it has a bit of containment to tell the story, which, again, this story... It's one of those movies that moves so fast, and if you're on board and you're enjoying the ride, you won't see all of the plot holes that are in the movie. And there's tons of them, right? And
really? I've been really bad.
The story doesn't make any damn sense, right? When you, it's just such a fast-moving, fast-paced train, but, the girl that hires Russell Crowe is the girl that everybody's looking for. I mean, when you think about it, it doesn't make any sense, you know? the grandmother... I mean, nothing makes sense, honestly. Like, the grandmother thought she was seeing the girl and it was actually... I don't want to spoil it. What the actual reason is that the grandmother sees her thing, but...
You're right, actually. There were a lot of coincidences thinking back to it.
And I think it's... Again, if you rewatch the movie, they'll pop up again, but the relentless pace and dialogue make you forget it. And a lot of times when filmmakers and this happens a lot with Bollywood movies, that they just say, oh, leave your brains at home and enjoy the movie. And I am able to do that with a lot of movies. But when you're not on board, every point starts annoying you. Like, every plot point starts annoying you after a while. And I think you had that a bit in Jungle Book, too. I remember we were having a discussion. And I think here, because both of us are on board, we kind of glance over those issues. But in a way, this is very lighthearted, brainless, leave your brain at home kind of entertainment. It has
completely.
It has no effect bearing on life. It doesn't bring anything deep, any meaningful thing except just entertainment for 2 hours, you know?
Yeah. That's the thing, you know, with films, I always sort of, you know, I always, I mean, at least for the scripts that I write, I always think of, like, what's my message? Why am I writing this and stuff? And, yeah, even with films, a lot of the time that I'm not enjoying it, it's because it's not really teaching me anything new about life or teaching me anything new about, you know, humankind and stuff. But this, yeah, it is. It's just pure popcorn, pure entertainment. Yeah.
And another thing we complain about a lot about is that a movie that is clearly set up for a franchise or a sequel, which this clearly is. I mean, there could not be a more open nudging towards a sequel, if this is a success, than I've seen in a while, right? Like, not being a Marvel movie or something like that. But again, we forgive it, because we enjoy it. We like this kind of setup, and it's a language that we're well versed in, and we know it. We know the universe. So I think that's why after we watched it, I was like, maybe we're the core audience for this movie, you know. But that's why I was like worried, maybe it won't translate to younger kids, you know, people that didn't know that Michael Jackson used to be black, you know, that kind of thing.
It's true. I mean, it does have a very different feel and pacing to anything that has come out in the last 20 years, maybe. You know, sort of the whole action genre has completely changed. The only thing that I can think of that is similar in style and pace is Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which was a cult hit, but it didn't, you know, send any registers ringing and everything with, you know, box office. So it might just be, yeah, one of those cult classics that people, a select group of people will love and other people will be like, meh.
Yeah. You know? I think the action, if you focus on that, you could say maybe it's kind of that Kiss Kiss Bang Bang movie. But the setting itself, it reminded me of a lot of movies. It reminded me of Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
70s pornography, that's clearly Boogie Nights, you know. Even The Big Lebowski, I know it's not set in the 70s, but it has a lot of that aesthetic. I watched a little bit of Inherent Vice. Mm-hmm. Again, same kind of flow. So setting wise, I think it's something that filmmakers like to revisit. Even that first initial shot of the movie where we have the little boy who's stealing his dad's dirty mag from under his belt. And I must say, that is, you need balls to do that. Steal your dad's porno mag when he's sleeping from his bed. Like, that is some serious, you know, hormones pushing you to do things that are really clearly a bad idea, you know?
Seriously. Kids had balls back in the 70s.
They had to. They just had to. When it came to porn, you just had to be very, very adventurous and less picky, I would say.
Yeah, and nowhere to hide it. It's just like,
So, and that scene, almost that boy especially, even reminded me a little bit of Super 8. You know, that kind of long-haired flop. So that, in terms of setting, it did remind me quite a bit of other movies. And I know that, like, that first scene that happened where the big car crash happened and you saw the shot of Misty Mountain, that classic retro porn page 3 kind of pose, but subverted. Mm-hmm. It was really interesting because you start off with... And again, this is an age thing because, like, kids today, they've probably not even seen a porno mag, right? Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like
digital and stuff.
Exactly. And our kids of our age, I won't say that we used to do it, but we used to ride our bicycle to the area that nobody knew us and then try to go into the shop and then or steal a porno mag when the
shop attendant knows. Find out the guy's related to him. Uncle or auntie,
plus you guys were in the UK, so you had a lot of Asians that everybody knew.
Exactly.
I was in Belgium. White people didn't know me.
Damn it. See, you had it much luckier. It's just like...
So yeah, they just kind of grab what you could and then just use that and then pass it along. Okay, I'm saying too much, but I think we need to educate our younger audience how tough we used to have it.
Serious. I mean, it started with, yeah, porn magazines, and then, like, yeah, you couldn't go to a freaking pharmacy to buy condoms after that, so, yeah. It's just like, Asians everywhere.
Asians, there's too much of them. But I like that shot that it had, initially it started with titillation, but then it turned somber quite quickly, And I think that, and for me, the first shot of a movie is always very, very important because it kind of shows what the rest of the movie will be. And yeah. I think it shows what this movie is. It's a bit of smut. It's a bit of retro. It's a bit of, you know, subversion of genres. And then, yeah, pretty much crazy practical action. Because that stunt is really, really cool.
Yeah.
The way the car kind of goes through the house.
I wonder why she said what she does, though. That's something. I mean, you know, she sort of like said, like, do you like the car or something? And it's like, why would that be the last thing that she'd say?
It makes no sense.
Exactly.
It makes no... Dude, if you start thinking about this movie, it makes no sense. I tell you, man. But it's just fun. It's a fun watch, more than anything.
Yeah.
The other elements I really liked about this movie was when... And this is kind of a thread throughout it, because again, it's subverting us, subverting the genre, is that every time these guys try to do something cool, especially Ryan Gosling, and it turns out horribly, it goes horribly wrong, when he's trying to break into a house, or when he's trying to throw the gun at somebody, and even...
trying to get shot by a cowboy. That's my favorite part of the film. I was just like, that is freaking hilarious. It's just like,
so funny.
Who's anymore? But just thinking back at it now, it's just like completely innocent, but yeah, I won't go in anymore. Watch the film. It's really good.
So yeah, I think any other sequences that you really want to talk about or anything that we should really point out? I think I always have a tough time reviewing comedies because I find it funny, you don't find it funny, there's not much to discuss about after that, you know? So
I mean, this is the first film we both went to see where we were both mutually agreed on it being amazing. So yeah, it shows that, you know, it's definitely got something of merit where two people of differing film tastes both love it. Again, we both love 80s action films and stuff as well, so that might wing it, but
maybe it's just for 30-year-old guys and onwards. That's kind of the genre that they're going for.
Hey, I don't know. I think my sister would love it. She loves, like, Lethal Weapon. So anybody who's into that whole buddy-buddy 80s, like, action cop genre. Not even cop, you know, they're sort of like Tango and Cash and Big Trouble in Little China, that kind of, like, silly, goofy man-children trying to be men, but still being children, sort of, just doing stuff. I think that's who it's going to appeal to. So, but no, I really enjoyed it. I would give it 4 stars, but now looking back at it with all those little plot holes, 3.5 maybe.
Just give it 4, man. Just be generous for once. This is the movie we agree on. Let's agree on the 4 stars for once. No, I really liked it, and I think, again, I think people might choose to watch X-Men, and I'll go this weekend too, I'll watch X-Men, but I don't necessarily think I'll be rewatching X-Men anytime soon after that. I've just seen Nice Guys, and I immediately, if it came out on DVD next week, I would probably get it again and I'll watch it again within that week. And I think that's something that this movie offers that X-Men doesn't offer. Unbelievable rewatchability. It's an underdog, you know, compared to X-Men at least. And it has some great casting, it has some great characters, performances, setting is beautiful, production design is amazing. Soundtrack was pretty cool too.
Yeah.
So it definitely hits all of those points and it really pulls them off well. And that's something that you can say about a lot of movies, you know. In a way, almost it reminds me of Deadpool in a weird way.
Yeah, because I can see that,
you know. Although it hits all of the elements, pulls them off, and it also subverts the genre that we know, that we're very familiar with. So I think that, and also the other thing is also like I'm getting a bit of superhero fatigue, right? And we just had an awesome Captain America movie. Maybe I just don't necessarily want to watch another X-Men movie, a franchise that I'm not that in love with anyway, compared to, you know, the other ones out there. So I don't want to push this too hard, you know. I think it's definitely a movie you can watch at home too when it comes out. You know, you don't necessarily need to go out for this weekend. But I think if you do go out and watch it, I think you'll have a good time, and it's definitely a movie you want to rewatch.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you said the same thing about comic book fatigue after Batman vs. Superman, though. And then Captain America came out. I told you it was going to be amazing.
It blew me away. Blew me away, Captain America. Blew me away. It was so good. But I love that franchise anyway, you know? So, but yeah, see, X-Men fatigue has kicked in, for sure. You know?
Yeah, so, it's just a pity because, you know, they just did so well with X-Men First Class. Was great because it sort of, like, you know, had a period setting and then just, and it doesn't, I mean, with Apocalypse, it just doesn't really make use of the 80s in much of a way that the first two did with the 60s and 70s. So that's one thing that was missing. And then the other thing that it's missing is just the, sad to say, the humanity and everything of the actual, you know, this mutant world and stuff. It's it just feels a very by the numbers kind of thing of just like bad guys, good guys. And that is where superhero fatigue kicks in. It's when it's, you know, simplified to the simple fact of just like, these are the good guys, they're fighting the bad guys. There's nothing more to it. Whilst our Civil War had something huge to say about, you know, should we keep a tab on people who, you know, have huge strength and everything, and you know, like democracy versus dictatorship and stuff like that. Batman versus Superman was hinting towards that, but couldn't decide what I wanted to say, so just went all over the place. So I think as long as there's messages to be made, as long as there's angles to be made on the world that we live in, like superhero films will reign supreme because, you know, they're entertaining, they're action-packed, they sometimes have a romantic angle, they're basically like Bollywood films, but you know, but yeah, you have to do them intelligently, otherwise you're just going to have a Rohit Shetty film, so it's, yeah.
I was wondering if you could make a whole podcast without dissing Rohit Shetty.
Never!
It's impossible.
Rohit Shetty and Zack Snyder, man, they're both my common enemies. They're just like,
it's the opposite of the guys that would turn you. It's the opposite list. It's the list on the other side.
The guys who would just make me never want to have sex again.
I think we can finish the podcast on that really weird note.
Let's edit this. Edit it very, very well. Edit it.
No, man, I'm keeping it all in.
It's going to go into...
Cool, Shy Man, where can people find more of you online?
I'm not sure they want to anymore. it's Shai Hussain, S-H-A-I Hussain, HUSSAIN.com. That has most of the details over there. So,
and you've got an awesome boat party coming up, right?
I do, yeah. I mean, like, I've done two Bollywood boat parties already, which they go down as like the highlights of my, you know, DJing year, because each one of them, like, it's different to a club because the party starts as soon as people are on. They have nowhere to escape, basically, you know. unless they jump into the sea. But, you know, it's great because, you know, there's no build-up of, like, 2-3 hours waiting for people to arrive as it is in a club, and everybody just goes for it completely. They know the words to the songs, and you can basically just turn off the music for about like a minute and people just continue singing it, and it's like, this is brilliant. So yeah, very much looking forward to that, and you are never too old to come to these parties.
When is the party again?
4th of June.
And where can people can still get tickets?
Early bird tickets might have run out by the time this goes up, actually. Sure, you can sweet talk them. But yeah, they'll be available, but they do sometimes, well, the last one ran out a week before the party, which was a lovely surprise. So yeah, if planning to go, definitely get the tickets whilst they're still yeah. And you need to come, Asim, you're not too old.
Yeah, I'll think about it. Maybe if you babysit and I'll come put my iPod playlist as a DJ, I'll be just like, okay. That was my impression of a DJ, see? See how old I am?
No, that's exactly what I do. Basically, I do put my hands up in the air going, yeah, everybody! Hello, everybody! It is mainly just, honestly, this is what I tell everybody about DJing. It is as simple as having a good collection, having it prepared in terms of what works on the floor and genre, so in terms of stars, and just looking like you're having a good time on you know, whilst you're DJing and stuff, because nobody wants to see a grumpy DJ. So yeah, I can make you a DJ, come on.
And are you still doing those Bollywood mashups?
Not so much anymore. You know, they're sort of, I mean, first of all, yeah, the Asian network and everything, we kind of cordially split apart. It was just taking too much time, which I wanted to focus a lot more on my writing and my script, my, what's it, DJing as well. So that's taking more of a priority now. But I do enjoy doing the one mashup. Actually, I'll tell you the main reason why I gave up doing mashups is because they keep getting copyright notices on SoundCloud and now Hear This as well. So it's, yeah, quite pointless if you're just making them and you've got no way of sharing them. So once those copyright things come down, if they do, then I probably will get back on it. But yeah.
But still, the old ones are still available on your SoundCloud, right?
Some of them are on Hear This, which, yeah, hearthis.com. Basically, yeah, that's on my website as well, if you basically just look for mashups there. But yeah, I mean, that's how I managed to make a name DJing and stuff, was through my first ever Bollywood mashup. So it is gutting how they're clamping down on this rubbish, but yeah, copyrights and stuff.
Damn. Okay, well, let's wrap it up. And I'm Asim. I'm not too old for boat parties, Bernie. You can follow me on Twitter at Asim Bernie, or you can follow us as the podcast at You Podcast. You can like us on Facebook. You can subscribe to iTunes, or you can drop us an email at youpodcasting@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, guys.
Woo! Come on, DJ Asburn. That's what it should be. DJ Asburn.
Yeah, okay, this is the good time to stop recording.